Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Republicans close in on a House majority, plus why FTX's collapse has set back the crypto industry lobbying efforts of its founder.
Sam Bankman-Fried built a lot of goodwill with Congress and with certain regulators. So that trust is shattered, and crypto firms and lobbyists are going to have to rebuild it.
And Warren Buffett bet big on the markets in the third quarter. It's Tuesday, November 15th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Republicans are now just one seat away from retaking control of the U.S. House of Representatives after a series of victories called on Monday night. According to an Associated Press tally, Republicans have now won 217 House seats to Democrats 205. A party needs 218 seats for a majority. Meanwhile, Democrats have won a closely watched governor's race in Arizona, with the AP projecting that Secretary of State Katie Hobbs has defeated Republican Carrie Lake, a former local TV anchor and ally of former President Donald Trump. And speaking of Trump, he is set to launch his 2024 presidential campaign today at an event at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida that's scheduled for 9 p.m. Eastern. Japan's economy contracted for the first time in a year in the third quarter, shrinking by 0.3% compared to the prior quarter. The contraction reflects increases in services imports and a sluggish recovery in private spending due to lingering COVID-19 fears and rising prices. Journal Markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff has more.
So this is the first contraction since 2021 when major cities were locked down. And while economists forecasted that Japan's economy would return to growth again in the current quarter, you have this really uncertain outlook because you have really high global inflation, recession risk from the Fed and other central banks increasing interest rates. And at the same point, you have Japan's economy minister saying that they need to be careful about the possibility of a global economic slowdown amid tightening in the U.S. and Europe.
Meanwhile, new data released today shows that China's economic activity cooled across the board in October. Retail sales contracted unexpectedly for the first time in 5 months as factory output growth slowed and a pullback in real estate investment accelerated. The fresh signs of slowing growth in China will add to fears that the worst is yet to come for the global economy. Billionaire Warren Buffett's company Berkshire Hathaway spent roughly $9 billion on the stock market in the third quarter this year, with roughly a third of that money going toward energy companies Occidental Petroleum and Chevron, according to new filings. The company also opened positions in Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing, Louisiana Pacific, and Jefferies Financial Group. The stocks that Berkshire revealed new positions in got a boost in after-hours trading on Monday. Overall, Berkshire has now spent $66 billion buying stocks in the first 9 months of this year. That is more than 13 times its spending over the same period in 2021. And in other market news today, the U.S. Labor Department is set to release its October Producer Price Index, which measures what suppliers are charging to businesses and other customers, while Walmart and Home Depot are set to headline another day of quarterly earnings reports. A week after the U.S. midterm elections, one issue has emerged as having received roughly 90% support at the ballot box: new borrowing to support municipal projects. From the small town of Clover, South Carolina, to bustling Austin, Texas, American voters said yes to tens of billions of dollars in new spending for road paving, school building, and other local projects, all of which promises a new wave of bonds for eager investors. Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Gillers writes about the municipal bond market for us and joins us now with the very latest on this from Chicago. Hi, Heather. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So this all sounds like a lot of new spending and a lot of new borrowing as a result. Is that really the case by historical standards?
It sort of grows every year. It's not a totally consistent trend like that, but generally that's what you see. And so there was about almost $100 billion in new spending on the ballot. And so far we've seen a little over half of that approved, but the results aren't in for a good $30 billion plus. And if the 90% approval rate that we've seen so far remains consistent, then it will be the most money approved on an election day as far as our data goes back, which is at least 10 years.
Give us a sense of, on a local level, what kind of money is actually being sort of borrowed here and what it's being used for.
Sure. Yeah, it is a lot of money. The municipal market is a $4 trillion market. So to date this year, there's been more than $250 billion issued in tax-exempt bonds, and we'll see more through the end of the year. And this money will be borrowed over the next few years, but a lot of it is made up of very small amounts of money. So you maybe have $150 million for a high school or $70 million for a police station. It's little projects that people don't think about very much, but kind of make life in small towns and big cities go around. So road paving, high school building, police stations, fire stations, digging sewers, flood remediation, all that kind of thing.
I'm curious, what about these bonds is so attractive to investors?
So they're very attractive to high net worth affluent investors because the interest comes with a tax exemption. So they get scooped up as they go to market, particularly because they're sort of a finite amount in existence. And particularly this year, because for a number of reasons, inflation and higher interest costs have made some governments decide that this isn't the year for projects. And then you have other governments that still have stimulus cash, so they're maybe not as anxious to borrow. And so all that amounts to a lower municipal bond issuance this year. It's down about 7.5%. So investors are particularly hungry.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Gillers, who writes about the municipal bond market for us out of Chicago. Heather, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll head to Washington, D.C. to gauge how lawmakers and regulators are reacting to the collapse of crypto exchange FTX. We'll have that story after the break.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
The collapse of crypto exchange FTX hasn't just jeopardized the finances of many of its customers. In Washington, it's dealt a blow to the larger crypto industry, and in particular of that industry's hope of favorable crypto legislation being pushed through the U.S. Congress. Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Kiernan covers economics and financial regulation for us out of Washington, D.C., and he joins us now with the very latest. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Luke. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, what is the mood among lawmakers as they take in everything we've seen with FTX in the last week?
Well, Congress has had a lot of its attention on the midterm elections for the last week. But the lawmakers who have weighed in, they're saying we might need to hold some hearings, let the investigators do their work, get to the bottom of what happened at FTX before starting to make really consequential changes to the law.
The founder of FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, was a pretty familiar face in the corridors of Congress, was he not?
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Bankman-Fried told me once that he spent about 20% of his time in Washington. He later said that he spent, I think, about a third of his time on U.S. regulatory issues. And he was also spending a lot of money on lobbying, but especially campaign contributions. So he personally donated about $40 million to congressional campaigns ahead of the midterms, particularly primaries. And then FTX, the company, and its affiliates and other employees, other executives, spent another $30 million or so, making the organization one of the largest political contributors out there. So they were really trying to win allies in D.C. and build trust, which ironically has totally shattered in the wake of this episode.
Tell us about the crypto legislation that FTX and other crypto companies had been hoping to see out of Congress.
Well, Broadly, the problem that crypto faces is that most of the cryptocurrencies in circulation likely meet the definition of a security, which is a category that includes stocks and bonds. Securities are regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which has really prescriptive, detailed requirements to keep investors safe. The crypto industry really wants to avoid SEC jurisdiction. And so what several of the bills in Congress would do is grant the industry that wish and move at least the largest cryptocurrencies into the jurisdiction of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which is a much smaller regulator, which does not have rules on the book that it could readily apply to crypto. It would have to spend several years at least writing rules from scratch, which would just buy crypto firms a lot more time to continue making money.
So are those hopes off the table now, given events?
I think it's too early to say they are off the table, but I think we will see a higher bar in the coming weeks and months. For Congress to pass a law that basically gives the crypto industry what it wants, for one simple reason, that Sam Bankman-Fried was probably the most trusted person in crypto in Washington, D.C. He was the face of the industry, and he built, frankly, a lot of goodwill with Congress and with certain regulators. So that trust is shattered. And going forward, crypto firms and lobbyists are going to have to rebuild it, but it's probably going to be harder because fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Who is there in the industry for policymakers to trust?
All right then, Paul. So what then do we expect to happen now?
Well, we're already seeing broad investigations getting launched. The Justice Department and Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office and SEC are all probing FTX and its collapse. On legislation, there was one bill out of the Senate Agriculture Committee sponsored by Senator Debbie Stabenow, a Democrat, and John Bozeman, a Republican, a bipartisan bill that we heard had been kind of tentatively scheduled for a markup this week. They scuttled that plan last week. I mean, that bill was aggressively pushed by Sam Bankman-Fried. He saw it as the crypto industry's best hope for legislation that would spare it from oversight by the Securities and Exchange Commission. And I think that as lawmakers get their heads around FTX and just the scope of this collapse, I think they'll probably want to conduct hearings and let law enforcement do their job and just get more information before they push through a bill. That said, there are also voices in Congress and in the crypto lobby who say, look, the FTX collapse highlights the need for regulation. It highlights the need for Congress to act in the crypto space. And so there's a little bit of a competing narratives there. But I think that there's enough people in Congress who are skeptical and did not receive money from FTX that this is going to tap the brakes on everything.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Kiernan, who covers economics and financial regulation for us out of Washington. Paul, thank you so much for the update.
Thanks a lot, Luke.
And finally, it's time now for a check of the weather, a particularly important weather forecast, that is. Energy-strapped Europe has been closely watching for signs about how cold it might get this winter in order to figure out whether its natural gas supplies will be enough now that it's no longer receiving its typical supply from Russia. And now the EU's Copernicus Climate Change Service has dropped its seasonal outlook and said it's grown more confident of milder weather than usual over the next 3 months in Europe. Journal Commodities reporter Yusuf Khan says that forecast will likely come as a relief to planners across the continent.
Europe's been seeing a really mild winter so far, and that's helped. People aren't switching on their heating just yet, and Deutsche Bank is expecting about a 15 to 20% drop in consumption from households over the next few months, as well as the fact that industry is using a lot less because a lot of portions of industry, so like the metals industry, is shut down. Gas stores in the European Union are around 95% now. That's pretty good because the European Commission was targeting around 80% earlier this year. So they've done really well in terms of getting their gas storage up. It's looking slightly more positive, I'd say.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.